This is Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Courtney Donahoe on Bloomberg.
Taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business and working overtime.
All right, we've got two people to help us take care of business. We have Robert Brusca, president of Fact and Opinion Economics, and also Michael Pento, the president of Pento Portfolio Strategies. Gentlemen, good to have you with us here on Taking Stock.
Thanks for having us.
Robert, all right, Bob Brusca, start us off. Talk about what's going on with the consumer. You say consumers have got some attitude. Tell us about it.
Well, there was, the Bloomberg survey, which is a weekly survey, is up to a four-year high. And it's been gradually making this move, and it's interesting. It's occurring at the same time the U of M index is moving up. The Conference Board index has lagged a little bit, but the Michigan index was significantly revised, and so instead of falling month to month, it's now rising. And we do see all kinds of labor market signals that are better, and we see some evidence that consumer spending has picked up. That evidence has been a little bit tentative, but I think it's still there. Certainly on the auto sales side, things have looked better. And I think there's a lot of evidence that the consumer has been developing attitude.
Well, Michael Pento, let's bring you in here. You can't argue with the data, and certainly consumer confidence is rising. But what about those gas and stock and crude oil futures prices, $109.68 a barrel? That's going to change things, right?
Rising. You are experiencing the fruits of Bernanke's efforts. And each iteration of quantitative easing has brought oil prices north of $100 a barrel. Let's not forget history. Let's learn a lesson from history. The summer of 2008, oil hit $147 a barrel. Gas hit an all-time high of $4.16 a gallon, and that helped bring about the Great Recession. It was a significant part of it.
Well, Bob, isn't the first guest today to suggest that we're going to have another summer of 2008. Michael Darda said that as well earlier to us on Bloomberg Radio. Do you think we're going to have another 2008?
Well, it's highly possible, and instead of the Lehman Brothers catalyst, we could have the Europe situation metastasizing. You could have Greek leave the EU-17 currency. Let me finish, though, my history lesson here. Q1 of 2011, oil hit $114 a barrel, and gas went to $4.05 a gallon, and GDP plummeted from 2.3% in Q4 2010 down to 0.4%. Now we're at back to $110 a barrel, and gas is $3.70 a gallon. So why would this time be any different than what happened in the prior two occasions? This is a signal and a symptom of a very weak currency. It's a policy on the part of the Federal Reserve to create inflation. Inflation showing up mostly in gold and in oil, as it always does, and it's a tax on the consumer.
Bob Brusca, come in on this, because is it possible that the U.S. economy will dodge this bullet? I mean, we're driving less and we're driving more efficient automobiles.
Yeah, I'm not on board for this idea. I think that 2008 was we were in a financial crisis, and there were all kinds of things that went on. And, the high oil prices were just, not the frosting on the cake, but the poison on the cake. And we were already suffering. So I don't think you can look at the oil prices in isolation to everything else that was going on. Look at the U.S., and you see all kinds of evidence that various measures have crossed significant Rubicons. You've got the jobless claims figures down around 350,000, which gets them down near a very low level where they're more like normal rather than cyclically elevated. You rarely get claims below the 300,000 level, so that 300 to 350 is really the sweet spot for normalcy, and we're right on that doorstep, and that's important. This Bloomberg index fell below, moved above a minus 40 reading. And that is above a threshold that is normally considered to be recessionary post-recovery weakness. So a post-recessionary weakness. So I see a lot of measures where they're beginning to turn up. The jobless numbers, clearly one. The job numbers themselves moving over 200,000 a month for a couple of months.
Is inflation, at least according to your definition, the same as the definition that you think the Federal Reserve has?
Well, of course not. The Fed uses the core rate of the personal consumption expenditure index, which is always far below even the CPI. I use real-world inflation indexes. I can point to many private sources that have inflation running at the high single digits. Look, let's look at the facts. Money supply growth, as measured by M2, is running at 10% per annum, but labor force growth and productivity growth is about 3%. So we know inflation is running around 7%. You can look at import prices, which are year-over-year up 7%. Food prices are up 6%, food at home, as measured by the BLS. But, Pim, I don't understand something. I like Robert Bruska. He's a very intelligent man. And I just have this question for him. Why does he think that we have some semblance of normalcy here in the United States and around the world? We look at Japan, they're in a recession. Q4 was down 2.3% annual rate. EU-17, Q4 is down 0.3%. The Greece economy is in depression. The U.S. is in stagflation. We're still running $1 trillion plus per annum annual deficits. Interest rates are at 0%. We've created a huge bubble in U.S. Treasury.
What's your question,
and
Michael?
Oil prices are rising $110 a barrel. I mean, how can anybody possibly say that things are normal?
Bob?
Oh, well, it's a big world, and frankly, I feel sorry for the Greeks, but I think that, this is a country about the size of Delaware, and, to look at the disequilibrium in Greece really doesn't disturb me that much. Japan got hit by, three or four different disasters last year, so it's not surprising they're recovering. And, of course, the whole world economy is still recovering from the last recession, and Europe might even be relapsing into one. And so when I talk about normalcy, I'm talking about the U.S. economy alone getting back toward normalcy. The unemployment rate here is still high, but we're getting on that recovery track, and that's what happens. You put one foot in front of the other, and then the other foot in front of that one, and you begin to make progress, and that's what we're doing. Yes, the unemployment rate is high. No, of course, we aren't at equilibrium unemployment, but we're beginning to get on that path, and I think that's good news.
So, Bob, do we get a QE3 then or no?
Oh, no. And I would just like to point out that, Michael, saying that we have about 3% growth and 10% growth in money supply, and that means inflation is 7%. There's no precedent for doing that. I mean, money supply growth may become inflation at some point. It may not. We can argue about that. But you can't use money supply growth less economic activity as a proxy for what inflation is. You just can't do that. That's just wrong.
Supply creation go. If money is created, Robert, and you're an economist, if money is created, I mean, GDP growth is productivity growth plus growth in the labor force. That's the only way you can grow an economy. So if money supply growth outstrips that, where did the money go? It had to go into something.
No, what happens is the velocity shifts, and that's what's happened. The velocity is shifting down, and as long as velocity is shifting down, the money supply doesn't have any impact on prices, and that's what the Fed is watching. And you know that banks really aren't making loans, and that's why this money supply is basically sterile. It's something that I worry about, too. The Fed's balance sheet is bloated, and we know that, but, you're trying to turn something that is a quandary into something that's an automatic problem, and it's not.
Exchange, MV equals PQ, but velocity moves with the quantity of goods sold, and money supply, just like Milton Friedman proved, affects prices. So don't conflate the two.
Well, I'm not, but velocity doesn't move with anything. You can't. If you can show me an equation that explains velocity, you could probably get yourself a Nobel Prize.
Well, Bob, let's ask you this. Do you not see the risks to the economy that the Fed is seeing, or do you think that they're not as strong? Because the plenty of Fed speeches in the last while, including from the chairman himself, sort of saying, things aren't looking so great.
Well, I think the Fed has an incentive here to see the economy through the opposite of rose-colored glasses, because the Fed does not want to make a change in its policy until it's really sure the economy has gone over the growth bump and that we're going to continue to keep this growth up at a higher level. So I think the Fed has an incentive to continue to be skeptical until we've had quite a number of very strong job reports. So I don't see this as the Fed being disingenuous. I just see this as the least risky way for the Fed to act, given that it actually makes policy, and given that, that I don't, and Michael doesn't, and Tim doesn't, and neither do you, Vonnie.
No, I don't think I would ever want that job. Michael Pinto, one of the things that strikes me, though, is you can be right but still not make money.
We're doing very fine here. I'm glad you brought that up. Pinto Portfolio Strategy is doing very well. And we're buying oil and gas pipelines. We have a barbelled approach to inflation and deflation. We own dividend-paying stocks all over the globe. So we're doing very fine.
All right, but what I was getting at is, for example, if you take a look at the NASDAQ, right, we're up more than 13% so far this year. Now, I understand, you say that all of the money that is being created by central banks, that ends up finding its way into the stock market. So maybe the gains are going to be more elusive.
Are in nominal terms. I mean,
or in nominal terms, indeed.
The DOJ has a 30 trillion yen bond buying program. The LTRO was 500 billion the first tranche, and the second tranche would be February 29th, probably another half a trillion euro. The Fed has expanded their balance sheet by $2.1 trillion. Where does Bob or anybody else think all this money is going? It's going into asset prices like oil, which is crushing the consumer and the middle class. I'm hedged against that in my portfolio, and we're doing very well. I'm not saying short the market. I very rarely do that. But I'm saying you want to get a real return after inflation and after taxes, and that's what we try to do here.
So would you be buying gold right now, Michael?
Of course. How could you? Well, that's the real and honest currency. You have to buy gold. The Federal Reserve is telling you to buy gold. They want you out of cash and buying commodities. Maybe Bernanke has a lot of gold in his portfolio. What do you think?
Bob Bruska, what about commodity prices? Headed higher?
Well, probably, but I think a good part of that has to do with the increase in demand from the developing world. You know, as China and India become more part of the world trading economy and their living standards rise, there's an increase in the demand for commodities. And this is really not so much a monetary effect as it's a real effect. And as far as all of this money being pumped out that Michael keeps talking about, it's going into reserves. The money supply measures actually haven't been growing very strongly, and the money supply pickup in the United States is relatively new. So, We haven't yet reached a point where we need to worry about monetary inflation getting out of line.
Forgive me for interrupting you, but Bob, M2 is up 10% year over year and is growing at a 12% annualized rate. How can that possibly be if all the money they created is laying fallow at the Federal Reserve as excess reserves? And you know as well as I that time deposits have no requirement. So you might never see excess reserves become required reserves. The money is supply is growing. That's a fact. Look it up.
Well, velocity is shifting, as I said. Look it up.
I love these guys.
Because you
get two very smart people together, and they've got two different views of what's going on.
That was some velocity.
Velocity. I love it.
Of money supply, but that was velocity in conversation.
I want to thank you both very much, Robert Bruska, the president of Fact and Opinion Economics, Michael Pento, the president of Pento Portfolio Strategies. I don't know whether to get under the desk or celebrate Vonnie Quinn.
You can listen to Taking Stock weekday afternoons at 3 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012 Bloomberg LP.